but...
You know Chuck E. Cheese. You cannot go to Chuck E. Cheese if you are under the age of 18. Or if you're over the age of 18 without a child, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty smart rule.
It is a very smart rule.
I think I had some friends violate that.
Yeah. Or maybe it's 20. I don't know. Maybe
yeah, 20. I don't know.
But I heard it and I was like, wait, what?
A 30-year-old.
And then it makes, it makes so much sense, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably pretty smart.
Yeah.
That'd be funny. You, like, you, at first you said under 18. I was like,
yeah,
oh, what?
That's not
that'd
it.
Be that'd be that'd hilarious. Be
live from Sanford Media Center, this is Daniel.
This is Chris.
And this is Zach. And you are listening to Nothing the Podcast, where everything is nothing, nothing is something, and quotation marks are the law.
So how about them bathrooms? I don't know if y'all saw the new current events going around, but recently, you know, Target has been changing the way that they handle their bathrooms in their stores, where they're more gender neutral, if I understand it correctly, and people can feel free to use whichever bathroom, male or female, they prefer, no matter what gender they have chosen or feel most represented by. Hot take in the America these days, because people get kind of up in arms about these things, about transgender or gender identity issues. So
it's way into politics too.
True.
And Ted Cruz has made remarks on it, and Trump surprisingly is like, who cares, you know? So it's interesting.
That is surprising.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, the basic issue, it just comes back to identity.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, like, because I mean, it's a question, like, what is our identity? There was a video recently released by the Family Policy Institute of Washington. I saw it via the National Review. I don't know if y'all saw this video. It was kind of interesting. They were talking. It was this guy going around, short white guy, and he's basically asking, "Can I be a tall Asian woman?" And he starts off with, "Well, can I be? So like, if I told you I was a woman, what would you say?" And so these college kids answer, and they're like, oh, you know, as if you make a good argument for why, then sure, you know, I won't tell you you're wrong. But then he kind of, like, pushes it further. Well, can I be an Asian? Can I be 7 years old? Would you let me enroll in a first grade class? Like,
wow, yeah.
Yeah.
Can I be tall, you know?
Yeah.
Can I be 6 foot yeah, for five?
Sure. Yeah, yeah, so. You know. So what do y'all think about that?
I think I have seen the video, and it's very interesting, because you're right, it is about identity and how we classify ourselves. It's just a matter of, you know, there are certain things that are either kind of one or the other, and then there are other things to people, I think nowadays, that are more, going to use this word again, abstract, you know, sexuality. It may be abstract, but being tall versus short isn't so much. And so I think it's really an interesting conversation that's happening, and it just kind of goes to show that these labels and identifications aren't working for a lot of people anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting because, well, from what I gathered from the video, it was the college students' answers that were quite interesting in the way that they answered but also didn't. It was kind of this default sense of, you know, very polite way of saying, you know, you can sort of be anything you want, but I think what the interviewer was trying to get at was this idea of, at what point can I no longer sort of decide something about myself? Like when this white dude is asking if he can be a Chinese woman, or at least like a tall one or 7 years old, especially when it comes to matters of like age and height that are measured by standards we have, it gets really tricky.
Yeah, the students' responses were surprisingly like unintelligent and analytical. I mean, just kind of, they seem to be indecisive. It sounds good to me, you know, if that's what you want to be. You know, there was no, like, you know, I don't know, there was no real conversation being had.
I thought my favorite part was he asked this girl, he's asking him, well, can I be, what if I told you I was 6'5"? Could I be 6'5"? And the girl's like, well, no, you're not 6'5". And so he says, I can be, so you're telling me I can be an Asian woman, but I can't be a tall Asian woman, you know?
Yeah.
It's just kind of like,
yeah.
But then a lot of other people were like, well, sure, if you want to be 6'5". And I mean, there's definitely like the aspect of, you know, and like they would, I would have a different measurement, I guess, if I were to go over to somewhere where they use like a metric system, you know, so many meters tall. But I mean, in the same vein, we do have, though the measuring systems are relative to themselves, like, I don't know, they kind of, I mean, if can you be 6'5" if you're not 6'5"?
Yeah, I think one of the strongest arguments of the video was when he was bringing up the 7 years old thing, and he asked if he could enroll in a first grade class because he's like a 30-year-old dude. And most people immediately upon hearing that would be like, no, probably not.
Yeah.
I mean, going back to the whole Chuck E. Cheese thing, you know what I mean?
Like, right.
Honestly.
It all comes together.
Yeah. Chuck E. But this idea that, well, it's like, well, no, probably not. That would be a little bit off, and I'm sure the parents would not be thrilled, honestly, or PTA, I don't know. But the point is, where do we draw lines? Because it is very gray.
It's all about religion, man.
So what does this say about, you know, making a definitive statement?
Yeah.
I guess what is definitive? Jesus. I mean,
like, you can't just go see in the quotation circles. Marks being made.
Just go in circles. What is or isn't definitive, you know? It's annoying.
Yeah, I mean, like, because a couple of the people were like, well, can you say that I'm wrong? And they're like, well, I wouldn't tell you you're wrong. I would just disagree with you, you know? So, I don't know.
Which is nice, but
basically,
what is that? Why does that matter?
Wrong, you know?
Yeah. Why does that matter?
Disagreement is the new wrong. But everything is nothing, and nothing is something.
That's true. That's true.
There it is.
This is a game called Is That a Religion? Where I ask Daniel and Chris if these seemingly non-religious topics actually can be religious. So tell me, Chris, can politics actually be religious?
Yes, Zach, I think politics can be religious. Our political figures are sometimes deified. We have houses of worship in Washington, D.C. Our culture is very much based, some of, part of the political conversation is very based in evangelicalism. So yeah, I think it does qualify.
Awesome. Well, Daniel, how about football?
I mean, did you watch the championship against Clemson?
That's fair.
There were definitely some supernatural things happening on that field. We got Bryant Denny. It's a cathedral of our worship. We have statues. We have borderline deities, let's be honest. So, I mean, if you want to get a little crazy, absolutely.
Awesome. Chris, what about celebrities? Can celebrities be religious?
I definitely think so. I think celebrity culture has a religious undertone to it. We also deify celebrities. We hold them to a higher standard. We also mythologize them and create a narrative out of their lives. So I think that definitely qualifies as well.
And Beyonce. Daniel, what about veganism?
The thing about veganism is that you have a ritualistic sort of dietetic lifestyle that you abide by, which kind of dictates how you live your life in certain ways. So in some ways, yeah, you can see it as religious in practice, and also perhaps in the way that you think about animals and wildlife, maybe animistically perhaps. Maybe you worship PETA, I don't know. I mean, anything can kind of be a stretch if you want to.
Totally fair. And guys, what about superheroes? So are y'all going to go see the new Captain America Civil War movie?
Absolutely.
No.
It looks incredible. And it has Spider-Man.
It does have Spider-Man.
For the third time.
Yeah.
Third reboot.
I like Andrew Garfield a lot, though, as Spider-Man. Kind of sad he's not going to be back.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
I liked Tobey Maguire. I mean,
first one was good. Second one was great. Venom. Couldn't handle it.
Yeah, third one was
good. Yeah, he was a little weird.
Anyway.
So a lot of people are kind of up in arms. A lot of people are excited about it, but a lot of people are kind of up in arms because Captain America is on the anti-government side and Iron Man's on the pro-government side.
What?
I know, it's weird.
Yeah.
And usually in the comics it was portrayed the opposite way. And a lot of people are mad about kind of something seemingly simple. You know, and you know, if you look at Iron Man 3, the Mandarin, he was supposed to be the most bad of bad in the Iron Man universe, and he was like a drunk guy who was getting paid to do all this weird stuff and was just a figurehead for basically a rich guy who did stuff with science.
Yeah.
So, like, why is it that people get so mad about this stuff? Like, you know, it's almost like a insult. They consider it an insult to its authenticity. Like, why do people care about this? What does authenticity do for people?
Well, I think that authenticity kind of works as this sort of rock people cling to, if you will. Like if you like earlier, if you talk about authenticity with tradition, loyalty, this idea of like violating what's already there or like going against what already exists. And so authenticity works as something that people hold dear. And so it's almost as if you go against what is authentic, it's as if you're going against the person necessarily in a way.
I think what people define as authentic is what they identify with. Whether consciously or unconsciously, they identify with these things, and you know, they you know, identify with their version of Batman. And if it's wrong, or if it's different from their version in their head, then to them it's not authentic.
Yeah.
So I think authenticity is a form of identification.
Yeah, I know it's kind of like interesting. You look at like something like James Bond.
Nice.
Yeah. You know, Sean Connery was the original James Bond. But I know for a lot of, like for me and a lot of people in our generation, when I think of James Bond, I go straight to Pierce Brosnan. Mm-hmm. Like GoldenEye, you know, kind of this prim, proper English guy. But a lot of people say there, you know, there is, and then like you look at Daniel Craig.
Wow, look at him.
Yeah.
How can you not? Man,
this just took a totally different
He's so fly.
Yeah, he's pretty awesome.
Okay, anyway.
But he's done a pretty good job as Bond, but like a lot of people say, oh, well, he's got blonde hair, he can't be James Bond.
That's picky.
Because people identify with the Bond that has, you know, brown hair and acts a certain way. It's all about what people identify with.
Yeah, yeah. And it's weird because, like, I think that Pierce Brosnan was an authentic Bond and he's who I compare to. But, like, a lot of people would say Sean Connery because he was the original.
So is authenticity just relative to the way that each person defines what is authentic?
Yeah, that's true. Like...
Is that fair?
Yeah.
Whoa. What is fair?
Sorry. Well, sorry. What is?
Tangent.
But, yeah, no, I think that's a really, really good point. Like, we all have different ideas of what authentic is.
Except for Coke. Coke is the real thing.
I don't know.
What? Coke versus Pepsi. Pick one.
Coke, for sure.
I like Mountain Dew.
Oh, that's good. That's fine.
Yeah.
You can have Mountain Dew.
Okay.
But Pepsi over Coke is absurd.
Yeah.
Yeah, really it's really...
Sorry out there for our listeners.
Anytime a restaurant says, is Pepsi okay? It's like, no. It's not okay.
It's okay if you're going to give it to me. It's not okay if you give it to me.
Why do you even ask me that?
It's not authentic.
Authentic could also be... I mean, it's abstract and concrete. In the case of like mythology and characters, it's abstract. In the case of like, does this taste like a real tomato, or is this like a, you know, something else, or does this taste like real, you know, lemonade, or is it powder? I mean, there are types of authenticity that are more concrete than mythology.
True.
I think.
Yeah, but even then, like, if you had a really bad tomato the first time you ever ate a tomato,
I'd feel sorry for him.
Yeah, you'd feel.
The lemonade example is better as far as, you know, real lemonade, take a lemon, you know, and you make lemonade, or you use the powder and it kind of has the flavor of lemonade. Which one's authentic? Obviously, the one with the real lemonade.
But if someone only had powder lemonade growing up their whole life, then they went to college and had quote unquote, like straight from the lemon lemonade. Which one is authentic to them?
It's still the one with real lemons, because it's real.
Well, yes,
but the powder is real.
But it's not real lemonade to them.
Right. Well, they perceive, I would say that they would, in that case, they're just wrong.
Yeah, nice.
Like, their idea of authenticity,
you bigot.
they've identified with something.
Welcome to Icebreakers, where we talk about different icebreakers. First one, what's your favorite religious pickup line?
My favorite pickup line that's religious is, "Are you a deity because you look out of this world?"
There you
I
go.
I like that one.
What about you, Daniel? Clever.
Mine would kind of be branching out a little bit into the Muslim world, and I would say something like, "Hey girl, you want to share my prayer mat?"
There you go.
Five times a day.
Nice. Five times a day. Good.
I think I would say, "Hey girl, I was looking in the book of Numbers, and I realized I didn't have yours."
Classic.
There you go.
Okay, guys, so what religious figure would you like to meet, and what would you do with them?
Honestly, first thought, I would love to start up a band with King David.
Nice.
He could play the harp. He could sing, I'm sure. Psalms.
What would your name be?
Well, I'll go with your idea, Zach. The Bare Naked Kings.
Bare Naked.
But I also like the Slingshots or Goliath and the Kinks.
There you go.
Killing it.
I think I would drink a beer and smoke a pipe with G.K. Chesterton. He's like my favorite writer ever.
That's good.
Despite the fact that I think he's a psycho, I would probably go fishing with L. Ron Hubbard. Maybe have grill some fish or have a crawfish boil, because he had this big yacht that he would sail around the Mediterranean. So
there you go.
Okay, guys, last question. Where would you want to take a pilgrimage to?
I would go to New Zealand. I want to walk, Middle Earth, and walk the path to Mordor.
Absolutely.
I will take it.
I will take the ring.
I would have a pilgrimage in the Himalayas, because there are beautiful mountains and there's a lot of yogis and wise sages there that live in caves, and it would just be a fascinating way to kind of get away from the world.
Deep stuff. I would probably say I would go to Alaska. I would check out the Northern Lights, see some pretty lights up in the sky, look at space. It'd be pretty awesome. So yeah, that has been Icebreakers. Thank you for joining.
Okay guys, so for our last segment, I wanted to ask both of you about deconstruction, because deconstruction has been the undercurrent of or the core of our classes in religious studies, and it's basically everything that we do, particularly in this class. So what do you think about deconstruction? Is it important, and is it enough?
What exactly is deconstruction?
Well, I mean, I think it's questioning labels and definitions and how things are presented to us, and analyzing it to see what agendas are behind it and who's making the decisions. You know, everything is about choices. So just a general idea about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing our department is really good at is kind of teaching us these skills in order to deconstruct. But they're really good, and it's something that I applaud our department for, is rather than reconstructing for us, they teach us how to deconstruct so we can be able to reconstruct ourselves. And they, because if they were to teach us how to reconstruct or to reconstruct for us, they would be putting their own views on something for us. But
well, I think that's very valid too. The thing is, how do we get to a line where we think deconstruction has gone exceedingly far and we're only able to deconstruct?
I think there is that line. And the thing is that no matter how hard you try to avoid it, you can't, you know, maneuver around labels and definitions and construction to a certain degree.
Gotta talk about something.
Yeah, exactly. And it's eventually you have to define something in order to learn about it to a certain extent. So, yeah.
And that's why we have quotation marks. Quotation marks are
the
gift of academia to definition.
But I agree with Zach. I think it's good that they don't tell us how to construct. However, I don't feel like I really have the tools to reconstruct properly. I think teaching, maybe learning the tools so that we can reconstruct on our own could be great, instead of just deconstruction.
And I think part of the idea is, like, maybe by being able to deconstruct, you can then you're able to acknowledge how,
right,
you know, what you're doing whenever you do something. Like, you're able to see the intention behind how you phrase something or like a word that you use.
Oh, definitely. So it gives you a keen eye.
Yeah. Keep going. Yeah, no, that definitely is like part of the idea of it.
And the thing too is that if you want to learn about a religion, you know, you're just going to learn about, you know, what the definitions are and what the terms are. You know, that's how you learn about it. You know, if you want to say, what is Islam and who's saying this and who's saying that, it's like, well, I'm not really learning anything about Islam, you know, just by deconstructing it to a certain extent.
So maybe I'll go ahead, like, end with this question and see what y'all think. But one of my favorite people really to ever exist is named G.K. Chesterton.
Yep.
He was an early 20th century British writer. And one of his famous quotes is that an open mind is like that of an open mouth. That is to close on something solid. So, like, kind of my thought with that is the idea of this deconstructing is eventually what we're trying to do is to find if there's something at the end that we literally cannot deconstruct anymore, that just is, you know? So, and then on top of that is when we can start rebuilding. So what, I don't know, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I can kind of agree with that. I think eventually deconstruction is important. I think first you learn about what has been constructed, then maybe you deconstruct it. One of the things that bothered me is that I had an argument with someone in a class about Eastern mysticism, and, you know, if you want to, you know, analyze enlightenment and what it means and who's making the definitions, that basically is an obstacle to enlightenment. You know, you can either become enlightened or you can spend your day going in circles, like, what is enlightenment and who's defining it and who's, you know, whose agenda is on display. You know, eventually you go in a circle, to me.
I agree. I mean, I think as far as the quote goes, like what you were saying, Zach, I think there is a place where the sidewalk ends, if you want to use that kind of terminology. I don't know where it is.
Right.
But I think, theoretically, just based on knowledge and understanding, I think there is a place that's a base.
Awesome. Well, we thank you guys for joining us at Nothing the Podcast.
Nothing.
Nothing.
All about nothing.
It's all about nothing. But we hope that you've enjoyed it. We've definitely enjoyed this time. And thank you for listening.